Hello and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Thanks for being with us on the program today. My guest is Frankfort Mayor Chris McBarnes. We'd love to have your questions for him during our next half an hour. You can call those into area code 765-496-1999. Send an email to ask@wbaa.org, or you can tweet questions at WBAA News on a Twitter. Mr. Mayor, good afternoon. How are you?
Stan, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on the show today. And as the precast mentioned, we encourage all of those who have giving hearts to donate to public radio. It serves a great purpose, but it doesn't happen without generous hearts. So we do encourage people to do that.
And we thank you for that message for sure. And we want to start the same place we talked to you about last month, which is recycling. You were hopeful last month's show that it would only be another month or so that Frankfort residents would have to keep doing the so-called quadrant system that's been going on since the fire at Werner and Son in July. It looks now like it'll be perhaps another anywhere between 2 and 6 weeks, I understand, before that gets their new facility gets fully up to speed and you guys kind of get back on your previous schedule. Is that right?
That's right, sir. It's gonna be a while longer. And again, my heart and prayers are with the Werner family. Their world got turned upside down. But you are absolutely correct. We're a little ways out from doing the entire city pickup in 1 week. Yesterday, on the 16th, we picked up the northeast quadrant of the city. On October 23rd, which is next week, we pick up the southwest side of the city. And then October 30th, we go to the southeast side of the city. We try to do a good job of keeping that updated on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook on our City of Frankfort tabs, so encourage people to follow that. But as I mentioned on the last show, Stan, we actually are seeing record numbers of recycled goods being turned in. So that tells me that people are paying attention while the Werners work to rebuild, and our street department is partnering with Werners to make sure that we do have curbside recycling pickup every single week in our city, albeit it is one quadrant per week.
What is the city's backup plan, so to speak, going forward? In other words, let's say there is another interruption of service for whatever reason somewhere in the future. Is there a way for the city to get back faster in that instance to weekly curbside recycling if that were ever to happen again? Have you been thinking about what you would do if such a thing occurs once more?
Well, it's actually before I came into office, we actually did a model similar to what you are alluding to. We used all of our own employees, our manpower, which are being paid out of motor vehicle highway funds and sanitation funds, to do all of that sorting ourselves. But what we found was the additional labor cost, the additional machinery cost. It just wasn't feasible for a city of our size. So finding a partner like Werner's where we could take all the single stream recycling to dump it off, have it weighed and be properly compensated for it was the best and most efficient model for us, because really we want those people, although recycling is very important, fixing potholes, paving streets, upkeeping our streets is also incredibly important to our constituents. So if push came to shove and we were put in a dire situation, we have done it before. We do have the balers. We have the conveyor belts. We could take men off the streets, I suppose, and have them do the full gamut of sorting ourselves. And then once it was sorted, take it to a vendor. The partnership with Werner's has been perfect. Nothing gives me the indication that we'll have to go back to that old model. But if we had to, we've done it before and we can do it again. Another thing that Werner is doing right now is he is actually sending employees over on his dime to help our employees sort the recycling. So this helps us. It helps us keep more men on the street doing their day-to-day duties so we can upkeep our roadway infrastructure while at the same time keeping our curbside recycling pickup going, albeit it is one quadrant per week as opposed to the entire city per week.
So I'm glad you mentioned the single stream recycling. That was something I wanted to talk to you about. Our reporter, Taylor Haggerty, has been doing a lot of reporting about recycling. And she says that one of the things she's learned is that there are a number of people who are experts on this, who are talking about the possible problems with single stream recycling, where everything is put into one container and not sorted beforehand. This, it turns out, leads to contamination in a lot of cases, which then leads to more recyclables actually being put in landfills. I wondered, has Frankfurt given any consideration, seeing as how you're kind of in this transitional phase of making people do more sorting into different bins on the front end to alleviate some of those problems with the single stream recycling?
The biggest thing we worry about is glass, because when glass bottle's thrown into the single stream recycling and it breaks, chunks break off, it goes into all the corrugated cardboard, it goes into the plastic. That's what really causes us headaches. But that's why Warner and Sons, and right now our employees paired with Warner and Sons, they're so good at it. I mean, these people, if you watch them sort this single stream recycling on a line, it's like a work of art. The cardboard goes here, the plastic goes here, the paper goes here, the glass goes here. So right now we have not faced that, so we're not thinking about altering the way we pick up recycling. But we know that, you know, if we really have an abundance of glass break, if things tell us we need to go in another direction, we could go that way. The thing we really like about single stream recycling is it's hard enough to encourage people to recycle. I understand it's a different train of thought, and you have to make a conscious effort. You have to have two bins by your back door. And to be honest with you, you know, 90% of what Samantha and I put out of this home is recyclable. So as long as we can keep it as easy as possible and keep things single stream, and Warner and Sons is telling us that, yes, they're getting things correctly, they're able to sort things correctly, we're not going to change that. Because I think the minute we do, we could see a decrease in recycling, which means more trash in the landfill, and it's counterproductive to the whole point of it, of keeping the planet greener, keeping our landfills not from filling up, and ultimately giving a little monetary return to the city by basically selling off those recycled goods.
I think you have accurately talked about the kind of balance that has to go on here between our people going to recycle if they are asked to take more effort, but also the fact that contamination is a real problem. You are certainly correct about the glass bottles breaking, and anytime there's broken glass in something, that's a contaminating factor. Those bottles themselves, it turns out, for them to be recyclable at all, have to have labels taken off of them. Everything has to be cleaned of food waste, whether it's glass or whether it's a pizza box or something like that. Do you think citizens would be willing to engage, though, in the conversation about whether recycling over time has become so useful to them and so much a part of just the way that we all go about separating now our trash from our recycling, maybe from our compost in some respects, that it is so ingrained now that it's not a novelty so much as it is seen as a public good that people would be willing, perhaps, to take these extra steps? Because the experts that Taylor is talking to are saying, look, there needs to be a lot more education about all of the different ways that things get contaminated, even if people think they are trying to do a good thing.
I think you're right, Stan. I think we're getting to the point in our city. I mean, we've been doing this for several years, even before I was mayor, that people might be willing to have that conversation, and we might have to go there. I mean, we stay in open communication with Warner. I think another point to bring up in this whole situation, not only is it making our planet greener, and we do have a landfill here in Clinton County, and I sure would like to see that landfill not get bigger if we don't have to let it get bigger, but it's also how it impacts our constituents' checkbooks. And so we actually budget trash dump fees in our sanitation budget every single year. And I can tell you, next year in the 2020 advertised budget that will be going to third reading here at the next council meeting, we have $180,000 budgeted for trash dump fees. So the more we recycle and the more we don't take waste to the landfill, the more we can reduce that budget line item. The more we can reduce that budget line item, perhaps we can take a look at taking that $12 a month trash fee that everyone gets in their utility bill and maybe bump it back to 10 or 11. So I think that's the conversation we need to have with people, and constituents need to really, they need to understand that, hey, the more we recycle, the less we have to take to the landfill, the more return we get off that recycling, the less trash dump fees we have. We can potentially, as a city, look at shaving $2 or $3 off per month of your utility bill. And I think that's where maybe people would look and say, hey, yeah, I'm willing to go the extra yard to save my family $40 or $50 a year.
Well, and you talked also about the amount that could be recycled. You said that you and your wife, you believe you could recycle a large percentage of what you would otherwise throw away. And it seems that that is likely true based on the reporting that Taylor's been doing. However, it seems also like what could be 70 or 80% recyclable is right now only recycled at a rate of probably 25 to 30% in a lot of places. And so there's a lot more that could be done. And we're also doing some reporting on what would make that happen. And one of the things it turns out might actually benefit your city, because as recycling changes and as there's less and less money to be made on selling it than there used to be, there's a lot of talk about how the manufacturing industry might be able to take some of these recyclables and use it to its advantage. You, of course, have quite a number of large manufacturers there in your community, in your business park. And so I wondered if you had any thoughts about this as a way of potentially being maybe I hesitate to say guinea pig, but that's kind of what I mean in terms of figuring out whether there are ways that you could not only be recycling more stuff, but also have it be used as relatively cheap goods for your industrial manufacturers and have this kind of virtuous cycle there between the segment of the community that is making stuff and the segment of the community that's throwing away stuff.
I think you make a great point, and I know that several of our industries are already doing that in-house, recycling the waste products that they in nature are a part of their process and they turn into waste. We actually have one industry in our park that sits on the corner of County Road Zero and Roy Scott Parkway. That is their business. They take recycled goods or what Federal Mogul would term as a waste good, and they're actually recycling that. So that is going on right now. I know that that is on the top of those leaders' minds in our industrial park, and I think you hit the nail on the head that can continue and grow into potentially a bigger impact than what it already is now. But I can say that starting, people are doing it to the point we have an industry that actually that's their business, that's what they do, and I think we'll see that grow into the future.
We talked at the beginning of this year when we did our public forum that Emily Seiberg hosted at the Frankfurt Public Library about whether Frankfurt, as some urban planners suggest, might need a thing that it is known for. And it seems to me that this could be something that could be useful to you because you've talked, as Mayor Barton has talked in Crawfordsville, about wanting to recruit young professionals to come live in the city and raise the city's population a little bit, also give, you know, a next generation of Frankfurt a home. And we know for a fact that as generation has gone by, more and more people are environmentally conscious. They're considerate of what they are impacting the earth with their actions. And so, you know, I couldn't help but wonder as I was pondering this morning if this has the potential to be the thing for Frankfurt.
I think it could be, Stan. And I think another point that you and I think about, we just haven't verbalized it this morning, are schools. We need to have a good educational push in our schools, a public media push per se, to teach the importance to our children very, very young. Of number one, how easy recycling is in our city, and number two, what that means and what it means for our environment. And I think if we do that, if we train them up young, ingrain that in their minds, have them do that at home, the more likely we'll raise up a next generation that recycling is not just a chore, but it's just a part of daily life. And hey, if that's what Frankfurt became known for, I would be totally okay with that. Because again, every time I drive out north of Frankfurt and I see Mount Clinton, what I call it, these huge landfills that continue to grow and grow and grow, it just breaks my heart. It's something we shouldn't have to deal with, but it starts with us. And recycling could be something that Frankfurt is known for, along with many other things. But we have to train and educate our youth, I believe, at a young age so that this sustains itself over time.
This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA. We're talking today with Frankfurt Mayor Chris McBarnes. Call in your questions to 765-496-1999. Email them to ask@wbaa.org or tweet them at WBAA News on Twitter. Speaking of things that could be hallmarks of the city, there's work afoot now by a group of local artists to put some Halloween-themed art on some of the windows of businesses in the city. How did that come about?
Well, I'll tell you, all the thanks goes to a lady by the name of Mary Lynn Peter. This was a tradition that was done back in the 1970s, and she remembered it being done and how much fun it was and how much community pride and spirit it brought during the Halloween season. And so she rallied a group of volunteers and local artists. And if you drive around the square right now, you'll really see some beautiful paintings that at times are a little haunting, but in a good way. And I think it's fun. I think it's interactive. And Stan, another thing you're seeing right now is more murals in our downtown. You know, you've got this window art going on in regards to Halloween. You have the Frankfurt Future Leaders Advisory Council interactive mural on the west side of 51 West. You have a beautiful Indiana mural on North Jackson Street that just sets just north of the ARC construction building. So you see it driving south into the community. And also you have a lift with artists right now working on what will be a beautiful mural on the east side of the Gym City Junction coffee house on the corner of Clinton and Jackson Street. So, you know, all of a sudden, all of these beautiful artistic drawings are coming to life. Some of them are being done by local artists. It's going to add a lot of color to the downtown. So if you come, I encourage you to check those out. And let's not forget the beautiful mural that's in Nickel Alley between the ACCS building and Nickel Plate Flats. So it's really neat to see all this public art come to life. And you and I have talked about it. We have the Gym City sculpture. We have the hot dog bun bench. So this is something I hope to see more of. I think it's catching on and can really add to our quality of place in our historic downtown.
On to a couple of other things. The Clinton County Humane Society has started a youth council. That's a group of 23 young people who are going to help do some work at the facility. It's been a while since you and I have talked about the Humane Society on this program and also talked about the questions, whether financial or otherwise, that had surrounded that group. How would you like to see these young people not just used by the Humane Society, but sort of empowered to kind of help rehabilitate at least the image that that organization had built up?
Listen, first and foremost, I hold no ill will towards the individuals of the Humane Society. They have a tough job. I mean, we disagreed on some things last year, and I was pretty pointed on those disagreements. But you know what? I forgive and forget. I want this organization to be successful, Stan. They deserve to be successful. I think everyone learns from mistakes, including me. I'll put myself right out there out front. But I think anytime you can get a group of young people involved with a fresh vision and maybe some different ideas and different input involved in things is good. And here's another reason why it's important. Our boards in Frankfurt are aging. You know, when you have the same 45 or 50 members serving on six or seven different boards, you know, one of these days, as Father Time marches on, people are going to have health challenges and they're not going to be able to serve anymore. So succession planning in smaller communities, we do a terrible job of that. We really do. And so we need to start bringing in young people. That was the idea of the Frankfurt Future Leaders Advisory Council, so we could raise up city council, the next city council leaders, the next mayors, the next leaders. And I see the Humane Society is doing the same thing with these young folks. And I wish them nothing but the best. And my office stands ready to help them in any way that we possibly can.
Are there still concerns you hear from people about the Humane Society these days?
You know, I really don't, because number one, we've completely removed ourselves from the situation. No longer does any funding from the city go to the Humane Society. So I have no dog in the fight.
No pun
I don't
intended.
have, nope, there you go. I threw the softball up there for you. I have no dog in the fight. We're not sending any tax dollars to the Humane Society at this time. And to be honest with you, since we withdrew that the tax dollars from the equation, I do not get the phone calls that I did get. And if I were to get any, I would direct them to the executive director of the Humane Society that, you know, that's the proper chain of command at this point in time.
One other offshoot of that is that the city wanted to have its own sort of solution for trap, neuter, release. How has that been going in the months since we've talked about it last?
You know, I think it's been going okay. It's something we're going to reevaluate going into next year. Here's the thing, Stan. You know, we've proposed a completely balanced budget for next year, and unfortunately, it has not left a ton of room for street paving. I would like to do more street paving. That line item for TNR is $20,000 in the Board of Works budget next year. Through Community Crossings matching grant, I could leverage that and turn that into $40,000. So I want to do a thorough review of the TNR program and have them make a presentation at the end of this year to see if that money is really being spent wisely. It might turn out that we keep it there. It might be, hey, you know what? We really need to focus on street paving, and that 20,000 would go a long way in paving one more road by leveraging that into 40. But I think Jet Services, I think they've done a fine job. It seems as though that they're helping get the feral cat population under control. But just like everything in city government, when you're talking about balancing budgets, you have to separate the needs from the wants. And the thing I hear more than anything from my constituents are the roads. And so that is perhaps a tough decision that is going to come across the desk that myself and the council might have to make.
Tony Rozworski, the mayor of Lafayette, was on this show last week saying that it typically costs something like $1 million a mile to pave a road. Even $40,000 wouldn't seem to go very far if that's the typical calculation, though. And so would it be worth defunding $20,000 from trap, neuter, release to pave a what would seem to be a small part of a single road?
He's correct, but there's also other materials that can be laid down for a fraction of the cost. For instance, there's a product called Rejuvetech that if it's a pink substance that goes down on the road, we're going to do a little bit of it this year. If a PASER rating of a road is 7 years, you just paved it 2 years ago, it will extend the life of that road by 10 years and keep that PASER rating at a seven. We need to do a better job of just not milling and resurfacing, but preserving our roads at much more effective price points as opposed to waiting until they're falling apart and then digging them up and rebuilding them or milling them and resurfacing them. So with the price point of 40,000, I could coat a lot of roads with Rejuvetech, and over time, not only keep those roads strong, but save the taxpayers money.
In terms of other places, you're taking a look at the city's budget. You've opened bids to run the Frankfurt Golf Course. You said in a story that we did earlier this month, you weren't necessarily unhappy with the current management group. You were just trying to see if the job could be done more cheaply. But is that a sort of tacit admission you think the course might be too costly at the moment?
Well, I think anytime you're delving out a contract of $150,000 a year, I think you owe it to the taxpayer to make sure we stay competitive. Listen, Oliphant's done an awesome job. I applaud Oliphant. They brought our golf course from the intensive care unit to really something we can be very proud of. But again, anytime you're dealing with a six-figure contract, every couple years, I think I owe it to the taxpayers to bid that out competitively and see what we get. I know Oliphant's going to turn in a response to the request for proposals, and we might open that up and say, hey, we want to stick with them. We might have two or three others that we open up and say, hey, there might be a great opportunity here and shift in a different direction. I believe in competition. I think competition's a good thing. I believe it's what made this country great. And that's all we're looking at doing is seeing if we can breed a little competition just to make sure that that things are kept on the up and up and we're doing right by the taxpayers, especially when you're talking about a contract of that size, rather than just auto renewing it year after year after year. I just think that would be irresponsible.
Are you at all worried, though, that a cheaper cost to the city could lead the course back to some of the struggles with upkeep that you and I were talking about on this program a few years ago?
Well, that's one thing that would be evaluated. We'll ask the tough questions, and we'll make sure that whoever we bring in, the expectation will be that the course conditions either remain the same or get better. The thing we'll have going for us is we have brand new grounds equipment and fairly new golf carts that are completely paid off. We didn't have that 6 years ago. So with a capable firm such as Oliphant and our fleet of grounds equipment and carts, they will have the proper tools they need to upkeep that golf course. But we're not going to settle for that golf course going backwards. And I want people to know loud and clear, we will be playing golf next year. We will have a municipal golf course. You'll be able to buy your season passes here real soon. But here again, this is just being diligent with the taxpayers' dollars, being competitive, and trying to make sure we're being transparent through this process to make sure we're getting the best bang for their buck. And that's my responsibility to do that. And thus, that's why we are issuing the RFP process for the management company to run the golf course.
So if that number comes back in still around the current 150 grand, you'll have just learned that that's what it costs and you'll move on?
Yeah, you know, I think so. The council's given me the mandate to spend 150. I can't go over that. But here's the next thing, Stan. The council's also given me the mandate to wean that subsidy over the coming years. So I need a firm that also understands that, yeah, you're going to get 150 next year. But in terms of customer service, how you run the pro shop, how you run the snack bar, how you market, it's going to be key. We ran about 6,500 rounds this year. We're going to need to run at least 10 to 11,000 rounds next year to make this golf course viable. So the customer service aspect is going to be key. And that's something we'll also be looking for during the interviews.
So at the same time that you need to nearly double the amount of golf that's being played at TPA Park, your parks chief, Travis Sheets, is actually leaving by the end of this year. It sounds like you're kind of in this time of transition for parks because, of course, Prairie Creek Park is coming online soon, too. Does this make it a time where you can sort of evaluate from a 30,000-foot view just how parks are done in Frankfort?
I think so, Stan, and it'll be a perfect time. You know, I'll be starting a third term January 1st. I'm so sad Travis is leaving. I've got all the respect in the world for him, he and Gina. Listen, I'm never going to be able to refill his shoes. He has just done a wonderful job, but we've opened up those applications. People can go to our city website and apply, but you're absolutely right. It gives us a chance to take a step back, pick that person that's going to move us forward, and whoever comes in is going to know our parks can't slide backwards. And with the new aquatic center coming online, with Prairie Creek Park coming online, boy, whoever comes on, they're gonna have a load of work on their shoulders. So they better come ready to work. And as we focus on this quality of place component in the community and how we build our community, our parks have to be top notch. So yeah, I've got some work in front of me, but I'm ready to roll up my sleeves, put the right people on the team, and get the job done.
All right, Mr. Mayor, thanks as always for your time, and we look forward to chatting with you again next month.
Hey, Stan, God bless. Thank you.
Take care. This has been Ask the Mayor on WBAA. Remember, you can send questions at any time for any of our four mayors to ask@WBAA.org. You can tweet questions at WBAA News on Twitter, and you can find the Ask the Mayor page at WBAA.org, where you can listen to archived shows. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Support for WBAA comes from your membership and Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.